everyone. Welcome to No Pink Spandex. I am Lisa J, and I have my wonderful hosts, Jer and Seamus. Woo! Yes, we're alive at Power Morphicon 2018. This is the sixth one, right? The sixth?
Yes. Sixth Power Morphicon.
And it started back in
2007.
Were you at the first one, Seamus?
I was not.
You were like two, right?
I was
a fetus.
16.
You were a zygote when the first one happened. But like, it has grown so much. We are in Anaheim, California. We're at the Anaheim Convention Center, and I'm glad I said Anaheim and not anime. I kept saying anime convention center for like so much. I don't know
There's a lot of those.
But yeah, it has grown. Like, Hasbro has like the best booth.
Okay.
Right.
Hello. How many of y'all like checked out that Hasbro booth? What up?
Yeah, right.
Who's talking about?
Who's happy that it's not just MMPR Rangers?
Yes.
So at the Hasbro booth, okay, like we saw what's up. You know, they got their display of different costumes and suits and props and whatever. But then they got this box. You see, there's this black box that is just sitting right in the center of their booth. What do y'all think is in the box, y'all?
What's in the box?
Well,
it can't be a Beast Morpher helmet, because we've seen the three Beast Morphers, right?
Right.
Yes.
I bet it's something from the anniversary episode. Like, it's a helmet that shows up, like a returning character we don't know
about.
Do you
think that they will announce, like, oh, this ranger is showing up in the anniversary episode, and you show their helmet, and they're like, look at this ranger that you always wanted to see? You think
they'll
do that?
The Talon Ranger? What if the Talon Ranger shows up in the anniversary episode?
The Talon Ranger?
From
the one that they're using for the comic book going forward.
Oh, right. I don't know about that. I don't know. Like, I mean,
they had the Charger.
They had his Charger on display.
Okay, all right. Like, okay, any guesses out here? Maybe what you think is in the box?
What you think? Just shout it out.
Ahead.
Okay, we're not going to go morbid here,
yes. Okay?
This is a family-friendly show, you know? Like, yeah. No, I mean, I honestly think that it could be anything. That's the thing with Hasbro, man. They just keep pulling out surprises,
It's a Kamen Rider helmet. Power Rider is confirmed.
No, Power Rider is coming back. No, like, they keep pulling out surprises, especially with this anniversary episode that they've got coming up. Like, can we talk about, okay, we saw Gemma in that power.
Yes.
Okay.
We saw a red
any RPM fans in the house? Any RPM fans?
Yes.
Okay. Let me tell you something. When I saw Gemma, I was like, yes, she's not in that other alternate universe or something. Like, how are they gonna make everybody explain why they're together?
The grid is shattered.
This is true.
There you go.
Yes, the person said, like, just be like, go say there's a perfect explanation for that, and then never explain it. Just never explain it. In fact, bring back Gosei and let him say that one line, and then we're done. Like, and then they just fight all the evil, and it'll be all right.
Lord Draken.
Okay,
so
Draken in the special.
So our wonderful friend Tyler over here says that what if that is the Lord Draken helmet at the Hasbro booth? Is that what you're saying?
That'd be legit. What?
And it's a twisty anniversary. Got it. Yes.
So working off that, my theory is that the Hasbro panel, they show a clip from it, and at the end of the clip, it's like, "What's up, losers? Drakon in the anniversary special."
JDF has put on the makeup. So he's willing to do it.
And JDF's in it, and that's the smoke screen, because you just think that JDF is playing regular old Tommy, but then he's also playing Draken in the thing. That's our hope, right?
Yes.
That's our hope and our dream.
More Tommies. We can never get enough Tommies.
Just watch, like, they'll announce the Beast Morphers cast, and it's just JDF three times.
Oh.
So before we continue on with this conversation, I do want to get people who have shown up to the panel and who are going to stick through it to sign up for our giveaway. So if you can start coming down, start over there, trickle over here, and sign your name up for our wonderful giveaways.
We have a huge box of all kinds of goodies There is some Bandai Japan stuff in there.
Yes. It's, okay.
There's some comics. There's some regular old action figures. There's a lot of things. But like I was saying earlier, you must stay for the whole panel to win.
Yes.
You can't.
Yes, I'm seeing new people come in. Ooh, yes. Uh-huh, yes.
And I will see if you walk out and then come back with 5 minutes left. I will know. Don't play me.
And of course, our I guess our top prize. I mean, depending, you know, it's debatable. You know, maybe somebody
we got
like
some good stuff.
We got some good stuff, but we're giving away the SDCC exclusive Psycho Silver figure. Okay,
mm-hmm.
We're giving
look at
that
it.
Away.
Oh.
Yes.
Look at it, Vanna White. That thing, Spy.
So
people are selling that outside for like $70.
They are
bucks.
Selling out. $70. That's right. They are selling that, and you can get it here for free. Get
it free.
Free.
It's a good price.
Okay. All you have to do is pay the price of enjoying our wonderful banter. Oh.
And I mean.
Well, I mean, it's a giveaway. So if you get chosen. Then you win it for F-R-E-E free.
And look, all of you were already waiting for like 5 hours today, but now you're going to be entertained while you're waiting.
Yes.
So come on. You all know.
But they made it. They made it here. They're here and they're going to enjoy our wonderful. So I want to get to, before we bring up our special guests, I want to get to about the anniversary special. I think, wouldn't it be great? Hold on. Wouldn't it be great? Right? Because, I mean, we're all going to the Hasbro panel, right? Like, we're all going. Like, that's happening. Like, that's literally happening, right?
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't it be great if they're like, okay, Ninja Steel, they do their spiel. All uh-huh. right. They talk for a little bit. Okay, fine. That's great. And then they're like, all right, and now we're going to introduce the anniversary special and then show it right here. And then let us all just watch it. And it'll be great. No? No?
Yes? Yes?
They're all like, nah, I don't want to see it.
Nah.
Oh, I can wait a couple weeks.
But I honestly think that, like, you know, it would be a really nice treat for the fans that have come here, flown here, driven here, you know, some by boat too, you know, like, to you don't know people. You don't know.
That's a long journey, but it's
I'm
possible.
I'm just saying. But it would be great. It would be a great treat if we got to see it a little earlier than
at least a clip, man. At least a clip. Yeah. Come on.
Little taste.
So. Without further ado, I want to introduce to you our guest of honor. Yes, our guest of honor, okay? Mm. So, our friend
I'm already here.
I'm
already here.
No.
our friend, I consider him a friend, but he is the, you know what, I'm going to give you a new title. I'm going to give you the marketing and branding guru, the expert, the king.
Oh.
Of marketing and branding, of all things that has to do with any toys. I'm just gonna give you your own title, but really, he currently works with the Alpha Group, and he works with marketing for them, and then he used to work with Bandai America. We love him, we adore him. Please welcome to the stage, Mr. Gregory Mitchell. Come on up.
Woo!
Please keep signing up. Yes, yes, yes.
This one right here?
Yes. Why, hello, Greg.
Yes, sir.
Hi. I just want to know who took the boat here. Who are you talking about that rode a boat to?
Listen,
Mexico?
You know, some people maybe, you know, they're coming from Marina Del Rey and they just, you know, want to swim on by. I don't know.
You've been learning the locale for a New York girl.
Well, we took a little trip around the LA area a little bit. So, you know. But Greg, yes, please explain to the folks that may not know, what is your role currently and what all entails in your job?
Well, more importantly, I guess, as far as we all are concerned, because we all had some good times together, I was the senior marketing director for Power Rangers at Bandai from 2013 till late 16. So that kind of covers Megaforce, Super Megaforce, Dino Charge, Dino Supercharge, and Ninja Steel, and Movie. That was a very busy 3.5, almost 4 years there. And on top of that, also Legacy. I think we went from two Legacy SKUs. I think it was the Megazord and the original Morpher. And we blew that out to, heck, a couple years worth of really good stuff that I see in all the bins here and being sold. It brings a tear to my eye of pride. But I did that for almost 4 years. Loved it. Loved every minute of it. The only reason I left, I got one of those kind of once in a lifetime job opportunities where you get to do everything you want to do. I get to make TV cartoons, toy lines, licensed, and our own IP too. So I got a nice leadership position there that I love. I don't know if you can see the tattoo from here, but I'm a master toy partner for SpongeBob SquarePants, who's got a big part in my heart. So we were partners with Nickelodeon on that. So I'm still Nickelodeon family, kinda, and I still pay very close attention to Power Rangers. And I talk to lots of you guys, I guess, pretty much every week on Instagram and YouTube.
And, you know, like, if anybody would watch the show live, like, you'd always have the Power Rangers SpongeBob crossover when, like, they promote SpongeBob across the screen. Oh, it's just like, yeah.
Wow,
no.
Wow.
SpongeBob is in all of our lives. So
hi, Lisa.
So for the folks that are actually really curious, what part of the toy line, what would you say that you had the most hand in terms of seeing it on the shelf or seeing it even at this convention?
Gotcha. When you do marketing in toys, it varies from toy company, but the most fun ones are the ones that aren't like big, multi-layered, bureaucratic affairs. Most good toy companies, the marketing team is a helpful engine that kind of keeps the whole train rolling. And the really good marketers are also absolute toy fanatics and geeks. You know, if you work, you know, marketing cereal or prescription drugs or cars, you can market toys. But if you love toys and you love how they're made, you love how they smell out of the package, if you have any kind of design background too on top of that, it really helps. So I've always enjoyed that aspect of it. You know, you can be a marketing stooge, so to speak, but if you love the product and, to your point, get involved in the product development process by helping set the strategy for it, talking to fans, figuring out what kind of Power Ranger stuff we should be put out with as opposed to telling you what we're putting out, that goes a long way to making the job a lot of fun. And the marketing engine that kind of pulls all that down the train tracks also takes care of getting the stuff into the retail stores, doing all the retail marketing to get the buyer who's in charge of making all the buying decisions at Walmart, Target, Toys R Us, rest in peace, pour one from a homie.
I know, right? Pour one out.
All those exclusives, for instance, we worked really hard to put those out there. And it was a group effort that marketing kind of helps go, hey, what do we need? What do the fans want? What did we make, you know, a good item of last year that we have to, you know, do better than this year? And we interface with Saban on a daily basis to do that. So, you know, every train on the track is important and it brings the entire thing to creation. But the proud part of marketing is you get to kind of help be in a leadership role to say, let's make this or take an amazing design idea from a creator and figure out how to make that into a product that people will love or help get it out there easier for them to get it.
And so I want to follow up a couple of things. And then, of course, like, this guy over here is like...
He's the toy guy.
Like, he buys, like, every toy, every known to man. So, like, we're like, okay, Jiro, like, what's the new thing? But you mentioned the things about exclusives. Yeah. So there are a couple of questions that I have about, like, what the decision process is like. Okay, well, what makes this exclusive good for this convention or what makes this exclusive good for this retailer, that sort of thing.
Gotcha. The first and foremost goal is to put something out there that you guys love, you guys want, you guys have been missing, or you may not have a chance to get otherwise. At least that's how I approach it from, again, I'm a very product-centric guy, and I'm a marketing stooge combined in one. In other instances, it's the retailer requests it and says, I need something different than Walmart. Toys R Us was very famous and really generous in that respect. To be a huge toy store the way they were and have as many thousands of square feet of toy footage, it was super important to them to have things you could get there that you could not get anywhere else. So sometimes it's a retailer request to say, hey, what can you give me? I'll promote the brand bigger. I'll give you even more space in the aisle to celebrate the brand and carry more of your products, but give me something that I know that Target's not going to have, or Walmart's not going to have, or Amazon's not going to have. And then sometimes it's a matter of efficiency. You know, you can get away with it sometimes with if you've got a mold that works great for a character, and then you know that that character would just look fantastic in a cool gold deco colorway, or would look amazing if you did it all in, with injection and glow-in-the-dark plastic. So sometimes you're using the same materials you've created for the main line, but you're giving it something special, something differentiated, something unique that makes it an appealing object unto itself that you might consider buying both of them. And then sometimes it's just a matter of getting caught under the grinding wheels of timing. I remember when we did the Legacy Mighty Morphin figures, and that was the, you know, the first wave that we broke up across waves 1, 2, and 3 to get all the Mighty Morphin characters. To get to market in time, we did not have time to tool up all their individual weapons. You'll remember it all came with, you know, a little blade blaster, and that was about it, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. We would like to have given them the weapons on first launch. We had some really high expectations from retail. We had a lot of high expectations from you guys. So we ended up putting them out with their basic weapons, and then when we finally got to catch up with the schedule, yeah, we had to go out there and get those weapons done. And I remember doing some Instagram or posts or some quick stories where someone went, wait, is that her bow in the background picture? Did you guys make that? And I was like, oh crap, cat's out of the bag. to let you guys know that. And then sometimes, you know, it seems like it's either like a cash grab or it's cynical. Listen, for some toy companies and some brands, in some instances, That's exactly what it is. We're toy companies. We have to make money. But when you care about the fandom, you do your absolute best to try to make sure that you're doing it meaningfully and sincerely and not just trying to go like, hey, you got $20 more for me? You know. We try not to do that. At least that's my mantra, and I think that everyone at Bandai felt that way too. So we tried our best to make sure they're always meaningful and special, that you guys would want them.
All right. I know Jer has some questions, y'all.
You were talking about exclusivity, and I was wondering, like, if you could explain. There are a lot of items that you said were Toys R Us exclusive, but then in the last couple of years, they started trickling into Barnes and Noble and Walmart. Some of those figures, like, was that like a sign that Toys R Us was dying, or did they lose exclusivity rights?
No. If anything, it was a sign that you guys were really hungry for that stuff. Our intention was when we made each like larger Zord and carrier Zord like Titanus, the idea was that once we sold out at Toys R Us, we would basically retire it, almost like the Disney home video strategy.
The 90s. Put it in the vault
for all us old schoolers here, right? Here's the problem: the Barnes and Noble buyer would come to us at Toy Fair and go, "We pay close attention to our competition, and you guys did a beautiful job on that. Would you mind? Would you release that for us?" And, you know, some small quantity that we can take, because Barnes & Noble does good volume, but it's not like they're doing Walmart numbers, right? Mm-hmm. And that's no, you know, slight against Barnes & Noble. They have a different size and structure and number of locations. But, so we would go back and go, okay, should we do this? What's been the fan outcry? Do they want more versions of, you know, the classic Megazord? Are they mad that we haven't put the Green Dragon Zord out in a long time? What should we do? I'd go on eBay and see what you guys were, you know, fighting over price-wise there. Mm-hmm. I'd go into the forums and I would either ask you guys directly, or I'd have a couple of like some of my reliable, trustworthy guys be like, "Hey guys, what do we think about all this?" And if it felt right and it felt good and it didn't feel like it was going to disenfranchise or alienate the people who bought it, but could also super serve those who couldn't get it and were then essentially forced to go on eBay and go, "Okay, I'll pay $200 for it." Click. Then it was worth doing, and so we did those, okay. And hopefully we didn't overdo them. It was the challenge we had was every year to grow that legacy business to answer all the specific requests I'd get from you guys. Like, make sure you do this, or please, please do this. And, you know, what about this Zord? And what about this character? And to do that and not bankrupt ourselves and you guys as fans, it's a very delicate line because we could put everything out in 1 year, but who the hell could afford all that, you know, and all in 1 year? We'd all be taking on second jobs and
third
mortgages
jobs
on our houses.
Yeah.
And
having to rent a couple storage units.
Eating government cheese for, you know, the month. You could do that sometimes, but not every time. So it was a delicate balance to grow the business, which is, you know, required of you for a global company like Bandai, but at the same time also not exhaust and burn you guys out too.
So I have a question. I know that you're a fan, right? I mean, you're not only just, you know, a fan of toys, but you're a fan of the show. Was there ever anything that you're like, "I would love to make a toy of this, but you knew it would probably not sell that well"?
It's funny. We thought that, and then we did it, and then thankfully you guys proved us wrong, but I always loved... I came to Power Rangers through, like, the weird, you know, I'd see tapes back in the day of, like, the Sentai series, and what I learned later was the Kamen Rider series, and I wasn't paying attention. I would mix them up and think, you know, because it's great costumes, great characters... Whether either of those series, I always loved the bad guys. So when we got to, let's see, we moved out of that 3 3/4 inch scale after, I believe, Super Samurai. I went into that 5-inch scale for Super Megaforce. And we wanted to put more villains out because the villains' costumes were so ridiculous. You know, here comes a guy with a basketball head and, you know, a rim crammed over the head. And some of the most inventive Japanese costumes came out of those bad guys. And it's even more remarkable when you think about it that Kamen Rider and Sentai were always produced in tandem with each other. There's brand new episodes every year, upwards of 40 episodes of both of those shows every year. To their credit, they rarely ever recycle the bad guy costume. Rarely was there crossover. You might see like an arm from one costume show up in another villain once upon a time, usually right. years later. But the inventiveness and the insanity of creating that many cool, out there, ridiculous, sometimes scary, sometimes goofy bad guy characters, was just like captivating to me. I always admired how they could pump out so many Pokemon designs, right? And then you start getting like, well, that Pokemon's basically a garbage can with eyes. Is that really a Pokemon? but that actually worked in favor for the villains and Power Rangers. So, funnily enough, we went, God, we put these guys out. They'll never sell. And then we kind of said Super Megaforce and especially in Dino Charge, why the hell don't we try? Like, what's the worst that could happen? We'll mark it down. We'll get it off the shelf. There'll be a new wave right after that one. You know, we have a healthy 2-4 foot business at every retailer. Let's try it. And sure enough, you guys responded very favorably because some of the more whacked out, ridiculous monsters and some of the more sinister, cool looking ones, they all sold. We put at least one, hopefully if we could do it 2 per case pack. And you guys always like ran off with them. So it was great. So it seemed like a bad idea at first, but we kind of talked everyone and ourselves into it. And we were really happy we did it.
So I want to remind people, for those who are just coming in, okay, you're in luck, okay? If you stay for the rest of the panel, you can win one of our fabulous prizes. All you have to do is just come up and print your name right down here, and you'll be able to win a prize, but you have to stay, okay,
You want to win free, and this isn't like dinky little things. We got some Bandai Japan in there. You know what I mean? We have some Bandai America in there. Don't worry about that.
Well, that was nice of you to say, but I was with you on the first one. Bandai Japan makes great stuff.
I'm just going to get my announcement on, you know. Okay. And then for those who want to ask any questions, you can start lining up over there. There is a mic. It's a wonderful, beautiful mic.
You can ask questions to Bandai Greg, or, hey, you can ask questions to us, too, if you want.
They don't care about us. Yeah, right. So you can line up over there and ask your questions. Don't be shy. Don't be shy, because
now's
your time. Keep asking questions, and that's fine.
Yeah, we'll do
don't
it.
Don't be shy. Mm-hmm. So, yes, go ahead, Jer.
I do have to put you on the spot because 2 years ago.
Here we go.
2 years ago, in a room like this one.
Here it comes.
In Pasadena.
Mm-hmm.
You had an entire room chanting.
Entire room.
One word.
What room? What word was that?
That word was
tour.
Tour. What happened?
Big, beautiful tour. I'll say this. I left in, I think it was end of October of 2016. When I left, again, because part of my decision to go, I took you guys into consideration about how much fun I had working with and for you guys, to serve you guys. And what I did was, before I left, I made a presentation for the rest of the company and said, if you guys have been listening to the fans all these last 2-3 years, if you see the size of our legacy business growing, if you see the immediate demand for Titanus, once it got a little bit lower in price at Toys R Us, and then bam, you couldn't find another one after it sat there for 2 months because it was too expensive at first. Take all that, look at this line plan, and if there's anything that I could give you guys before leaving is follow this, and you should make everybody happy because everything here that they've been asking for is sequentially, thoughtfully, and strategically listed in here to be potentially released at some point if you guys can sustain it and do it. So, you know, Serpentero is in there, and Psycho Rangers, which came to fruition, and Tor. And the challenge to Tor was going to be, what can we learn from Titanus when we first put that out? At $170, it was a tough sell. And if you guys knew what we were trying to put into that in the first place before we had to cost reduce it, it probably would have been more like $200 and $225. Because we had electronic lights and sounds in it. We had a bigger, thicker, like blingier, like dookie chain around that thing's neck. I mean, it was really going to be fantastic. It came out great, don't get me wrong. But what did we learn about that thing being 170 and how some of the faithful came out and bought it, but it didn't fly off the shelves. And then we gave Toys R Us a little bit of, you know, funding to maybe knock it down to 150. Oh, start selling more of them. Once you got closer to 130, all of a sudden, gone off shelves, back on eBay, $200, $250, $300, $500. What can we learn there in order to put all that into a plan that makes Tor the right size, the right features, and part of that whole giant Zord family that you kind of needed from that series? I'm waiting for Tor too.
Okay.
That sounds like a really good film or novel name, right? Waiting for Tor. Would you read that book?
I would read that book. I would write that book.
I have a feeling you would at least write the foreword, if not the actual book.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You look like that guy.
So
thank you.
You look like that?
No, I mean that. Literary,
yeah.
Erudite, and a fan.
There you go. So, like, besides Tor, like, what were some of the things that were at most asked for anytime? Because you would, like, show up at conventions and that sort of thing. Like, what were fans asking for the most?
Poissandra. Which you all got. I'll be, you know,
eventually.
A little less deco than maybe you thought, because, you know, for $10, it's hard to... If there's one thing, and I say this in defense and allegiance and loyalty to all my Bandai teammates, was, and anyone that makes toys felt this over the last couple of years, if there's anything that went up in cost that was hard to sustain in a toy business, plastic, you can work around that. Petroleum prices always change. Plastic always changes. There's ways to maximize that and make that okay. There's different blends and grades of plastic. But the one thing you can't chintz on price-wise is paint and deco. So look at some of your other action figure brands that you like, too, that were still at that $10 and under price point, and take a look at those. And a lot of those had less deco hits and paint hits than you might expect the character to have from their TV show or their movie or from their comic book. And so that was always a tough one when it came to the $10 figures. So we got Poissandra out. I saw some of y'all did some beautiful paint customs of her on social media, which was a totally cool and right thing to do. So her Psycho Rangers, which you guys might have closer ear to the streets, have all five been given a release date yet?
The two female ones have not.
Come on, guys.
Yeah.
What castle do we have to storm to make that happen?
That seems to be the problem. The two female Zeo Rangers were GameStop exclusives. They announced the Yellow Ranger from Dino Thunder. They haven't shown. Yeah, she hasn't shown up yet. So I guess it's female figures are just hard to sell still.
Well, here's the interesting thing. Maybe it's a segue into like a Hasbro kind of point of view too. When we started thinking up the legacy line of figures, I knew that a lot of you guys are also Marvel fans, and you're also DC fans, and you're also Star Wars fans. So the goal for us was to make up a legacy figure of that level of quality with more deco and paint, because when you're, you know, that little bit more expensive, you can sustain those kind of costs more. But at the same scale as all of your Black Series, Legends, etc. So maybe you guys keep talking out loud and go visit that nice, big, beautiful new booth up at the front of the lobby there. Maybe they'll pick up the baton and maybe they'll get the missing Psycho Rangers in there. You know, I think their product starts hitting shelf next year, spring or mid next year.
Yeah, I saw February for it was red, blue, and black Psycho here. Mm-hmm. Australia, you know, they just ahead of us. They've been had them. like so anybody from Australia can help a sister out, I'm just saying. So I don't know. Like, I mean, and in terms of that, in terms of dealing with international retailers and that sort of thing, I think I know the answer, but like, so how come Australia can just be like, nope, we want these now, and then us US folks are just waiting?
Sometimes it's funny. You mentioned like GameStop, right? Sometimes, going back to the exclusives conversation, sometimes a retailer steps in and goes, I want that, or I want them, and naturally they'll get them first, or they're the only place you'll ever get them. But there's actually, it's funny, it depends when it comes like an Australian retailer, and sometimes even the UK benefits from this, although it doesn't benefit for the same reason. Oftentimes it comes down to when the order is placed and how close you are to the port of export. Australia is pretty close to all the Chinese factories. Mm. So the boat might actually hit them first before it does its journey around the world over the course of 4 to 5 weeks to get supports on the East Coast or ports on the West Coast to start bringing everything into the U.S. Once they're in the U.S., they go through the ports, they go through customs, and they go to whatever retailer's distribution center is, usually, again, along the coastline or more in the middle of America. And then they start getting shipped out to stores. Australia, smaller country, or at least smaller concentration of retailers, and a hell of a lot closer to China, might be some of the reasons why they get some of the products sooner. Just a theory. They might order them sooner too. Or someone in order management just like hit the wrong button, or if you're Australian, the right button, and they got the goods first.
Hmm.
All kinds of very unsexy things involved in toys, logistics, operations, shipping. If you have a mathematical mind, an engineering mind, a mind for that stuff, it's very sexy. If you're a marketing stooge like me who likes, you know, plastic things and the smell of action figures, it's like, get on the boat when? Okay, great. Get into the store. Thank you. Yeah, that's the journey of a toy from factory to shelf is an interesting or not one.
So one question I have before we get to our fan question over here is, can you talk a little bit about the relationship between that Bandai America had, not just with Saban, but also with Toei, and how did Toei have to approve certain toy designs, and how much influence in Toei, or if any, did Toei have on the actual American show, and what did that do for you guys in the toy sector?
Gotcha. That's a good question. When it came to the toy stuff, we were pretty autonomous. I think once we discovered that at a certain point in Japan, toy scales, toy materials kind of took a different, more premium route compared to the way the price point structures of American toys usually are sold. So it no longer became an instance of, here's this amazing toy that sold great in Japan, it's going to do great in America too. There was a certain distinctive line where that kind of stopped being the case. Which, of course, resulted in more, as you guys refer to it, the Bandai America version of the toys versus the Japanese ones. Things got smaller in some cases. Some cases, the figures didn't change at all. Sometimes they were drastically different, or they changed in scale, to reflect more Western market challenges or pricing. But when it came to what we put out in the U.S., Toei, wasn't usually involved at all in an approvals level. Or a manufacturing level, nor was Bandai Japan. The other part of your question, I think, was when it came to Saban.
Like sort of the relationship between Saban and Toei itself in terms of the making of the show. Like, do you have any insights on that? Like, how much control did Toei have over the show, if anything?
Gotcha. Most of my interactions to that extent were usually in the pre stages. Mm. So. As we all know, there'd be certain years where we'd be a little bit closer to the most recently aired version of Sentai, and there were certain years then, Beast Morphers being a perfect example of it, where it didn't appear here at all in the U.S. either at all or for the longest time. So I think what you ended up having was, Toei always had a great, wonderful finished product for us to kind of look at. Saban being, the primary head of all that would take a look at each of the series, figure, okay, what... From a creative standpoint, what kind of stories can we tell with that series? And then, of course, you have the marketing minds, and then they would bring Bandai in, of course, from the product side and the marketing side to go, is this a great series for number of Rangers? Is this a great series for number of Zords, a number of villains, etc.? And so we would, at that point, as far as I understand and as far as my experience went, Toei was more than, they basically would then turn their attention to whatever the current series in development and the current on-air series were, because they're always working in leapfrog teams, and then we would work on obviously putting the theme out here for the U.S.
So if you can, you have moved on from Bandai. If you can give either a situation or circumstance where you're like, oh, I wish that particular thing we didn't do that, what would it be?
The belts on the Mighty Morphin Legacy figures in the first wave. There was a fantastic rumor too. I think Leslie Hum, Deca Blue, pointed this one out to me, that my departure was around the same time of that, and there was some conjecture that my departure had something to do with the belts. On one side of the camp was Greg was so outraged in defense of the fans that he actually quit over it, and then there was another one. Thankfully, a smaller camp. We said, oh, yeah, good, they fired Greg over the belt color. that fun drama aside, that was a total bummer. And it's just one of those things where perfection is hard to get, and when you got it, you got to hold on to it and keep it. And there was some sort of goof on the back-end level where those things, Saban approved it without the belt being wrong, we approved it without the belt being wrong. Someone might have missed a color cue or something at the factory level. It's something as probably as simple and innocent and innocuous as that. But, oh, man, what a bummer to get those at first. So that was a bummer. I didn't like that.
Sorry to bring you down, but actually they're coming to. I was like, oh no, don't leave me.
Also, don't forget you can line up for questions if you want to ask questions to Greg or us. Don't forget.
Yeah. So, otherwise, she's gonna just keep on talking.
I will keep talking. I will literally keep talking. She like somebody can ask a question. Anybody, it's right there. But the they're re-releasing the Mighty Morphin Legacy figures. That's another thing that I saw, that they're re-releasing them. So with re-releases, is there a chance that we can get those corrected? I mean, in generally speaking, I know you're not with them anymore, but gotcha. Generally speaking,
no, gotcha. And just so I'm clear on that, Bandai is gonna do another wave of those before the end of their deal.
Yes,
yeah. That's awesome. My guess is that they're going to do exactly that. I would say they would probably make the belt correction so everyone can have a full set with the right belts. And then it's a question of whether or not, I'm not sure, would those include the full weapons as opposed to, you know, just the pew-pew?
That is, I didn't see pictures of the weapons. We've been so busy at this convention. There's a lot of things going on. But, yeah, I did see, I saw in the picture that, like, because, like, the ones that had the wrong belts were... The Blue Ranger,
Blue, black, and pink.
Yep.
That was
Wave 2?
Yes.
Yeah.
So, you know, in the picture, they had white belts. It was there. Mm. Hopefully.
Hercules.
You know?
So I have a question. What do you think?
Wait a minute. We have some questions from the...
Thank God.
Yes. All right. Please tell us your name, where you're from, and your question.
Hi, my name is Eric. I'm from Jersey.
Jersey in the house. What?
Yeah. Well, I don't know how to quite phrase this just because it's been a long day, but I'm curious to know if there was like maybe a point of diminishing returns when it comes to like creating Mighty Morphin Legacy figures, because at some point we get a little tired of having to buy 100 Mighty Morphin figures over and over again. For a while, fans were wondering if we're ever going to get Zio or Turbo or anything. At this point, it looks like it's going to stop at Zio. Again, my question is just that, like, is there a point where it's like you make too many Mighty Morphin? I don't know how to quite phrase this. I hope you know what I'm getting at. It's
totally.
Like, yeah.
It's a double-edged sword, right? Because the Mighty Morphin ones always sell the most, right? That's always, that's your new hope of the series, so to speak, when it comes to the popularity amongst the general public, right? But then for the fandom, yeah, you see the same characters, you see the same looks, the same colorways, you start going, okay, what about my favorite series? You know, I stuck around longer than that, than those first three or four seasons. Or I came into it, you know, 10 years later, I want to see my series. When we did the line strategy for those legacy figures, we knew we had to do two things. One was we had to do right by the fans that would make this a longer-term sustainable action figure line. And in the more immediate term, we had to make the retailer absolutely satisfied. What satisfies the retailer? Clean, steady sell-through of product on shelf. So because of that, we knew we had to do Mighty Morphin sooner than later, and probably among the first couple waves. So then we started thinking to ourselves, okay, what are we going to do here? If we do it literally season by season and each wave is done in sequential order, we're going to have fantastic sales maybe for the first couple of years. And then in general, you know, you're going to have some fans that might be like, okay, I was good after Wild Force, or yeah, you know, after Ninja Storm, I joined a rock band, went on tour. I didn't watch the show for the next couple of years. We did not want to have come out of the gate roaring like a lion, a lion's a word, and then do this depending on the popularity of the season. At Bandai, we had years worth of POS reports of which seasons sold better than others. At Saban, they had great ratings information that went back as far as this season did this ratings. This one, you know, wasn't as strong, but it did better on DVD kind of thing. So that's why we kind of came up with a staggered, almost like kind of like weird leapfroggy thing, to not do seasons in a sequential order. That was the first order of business. The second one was not to completely load all the Mighty Morphin characters in the first, you know, wave, or even the first just two waves, to not give you guys the impression that was, oh, yay, more Mighty Morphin product, and disappoint the other half of the fans, but also to make sure we had that very swift clip of POS at the retailer. So we broke up Mighty Morphin into essentially three waves, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. The wave strategy was, half the wave is one theme, but the other half is another theme. And then we kind of started figuring out how to double helix those waves together based somewhat on show popularity, but also based on cult favorites, fan favorites. So you'd never, if the line kept going for another 10 years, you should not, in theory, have had one wave that was too heavy on a B version of the series or characters y'all didn't like, nor would you have exhausted all of your most popular series in the first two or three years of sales. That's basically the crux of it. I hope it started to work. I hope it was getting some steam on there. But then, of course, with the change of the landscape in the last couple of months, like I said earlier, I'd be, as a fan and as a collector, I'd be really interested to see if, since it is such a similar scale to their usual $20 higher-end figure offering at Hasbro in both Marvel and Star Wars, I'm curious to see if they'll continue legacy in that scale.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Yes.
Hello, hello, hello.
Hello.
My name is Brandon. I'm from Los Angeles. I have, like, I guess this can be, like, I guess a two-part question. I know you guys, I think Bandai still did, like, the five-pack, where, like, you have, like, the five Rangers, or you'll have, yeah, that one. Okay. What goes into, like, selecting which characters go in there? Because, like, on the Ninja Steel one, I know there was one where it was, like, red, blue, pink, and yellow, but white was missing, and it was replaced with a bad guy. Like, was it, like, your choice to, like, exclude the White Ranger and add in, like, a bad guy because you really wanted a bad guy in there? Or, like, what was the choice behind that, like, excluding one of the Rangers when you could just have them all?
It's a great question. You're draining my brain on the specifics of that five-pack. I do vaguely remember working on it, though. If that one, I'm not mistaken, was that one was Toys R Us or was it Target?
Toys R Us.
Okay. It could have been either the Toys R Us buyer, or I think we might have done an exploration for the Target buyer too. What they'll typically say is, they say if you can put a bad guy in there, it always does great. And what they'll do is they'll compare it. They'll say when Mattel did a five pack for Justice League characters, you know, it was important to have the Joker, or it was important to have another prominent villain in there, but don't do more than one. Then do the rest of them all the heroes. And of course, you're like, well, you know, depending on what season, of course, it is. Well, there's five good guys, so we're going to give you four good guys and one bad guy. At the end of the day, we would be like, well, you know what? It should be okay. You're going to be able to get that Ranger on the peg for $10 individually anyway. That's. I'm guessing that's probably the kind of methodology we use in a five-pack like that. Sometimes we do a solid five-pack of purely that Ranger team. In some cases, I believe, like in Super Samurai, we did a six-pack, you know, and include the Gold Ranger in that pack too. So sometimes it's the retailer that helps try to wag the dog on that. They know it sells well. If it sold well as a Star Wars 5-pack or as a Marvel 5-pack or a DC 5-pack, they would give their advice on that one for a Power Rangers 5-pack too.
Okay. Cool. Thank you. I know we have to wrap up pretty soon, and I want to give out these prizes, child. This is going to be the last two in a little bit of rapid fire. So you ask your question, and then like we can hopefully give enough time for the next panel to come in, all right?
Yes. No. Saban.
Okay, it was going to be a longer question, but I'll try and keep it shorter. I would say to me what looks like it's going to be the biggest challenge for the toy industry in general is going to be the distribution method, because across all industry, the decline in bricks and mortar outlets is really hitting home. And the toy industry, I would say, is really the one that's getting hit hardest, where now you've only got maybe two or three out there. So what I was wanting is for you to say what you would like to see, or what you think would be maybe the way for the industry to go forward with its distribution methods.
That's a majorly big question, because it affects my livelihood. I'm not saying in the end a turn here, because Mattel and Hasbro and Jack Specific, they're all publicly traded companies, so they do earnings recalls and reports. Most of those retailers, I would say Lego included, most of those manufacturers had at least 10% of their annual sales at Toys R Us alone. You know, that's a big nut. To not have that anymore absolutely hurts. I think projections for this year from NPD are that the toy business will definitely be at most flat. We might be down a couple of points, and it'll be the first time it's been that way, probably in at least 10, if not 15 years. So it's a big blow. However, I do think that whether it's brick and mortar or whether it's through digital retailers, there's a lot of activity happening right now amongst retailers who all want to get a piece of what Toys R Us did and served so well to the toy public. There are certain categories and certain manufacturers that can bring what they do to Walmart or to Amazon or to, we talked about earlier, GameStop is no longer just a game store, right? How many of us buy figures and t-shirts and collectibles there now and don't buy video games at all anymore there? You're going to see a lot of retailers whose usual bread and butter is not toys stepping into the game and seeing what they can do to make sure they have good selection, good price value, and really keep supporting the industry. So we're optimistic, but you're right. It's not easy. It's something we struggle with every day.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. All right, very quickly. Thanks. Okay.
Quick. I'm Curtis from Toronto, and I have another what happened kind of question about a product that, while it was announced probably shortly after your time at Bandai, I'm assuming you probably had a hand in it, and that is the classic Rita Repulsa that was going to be in the 90, the Then and Now movie pack. Do you have anything to say about that?
I've not heard yet, but I would like one as well, because I love ripping on that last one we did. That one that we put in that Super Samurai packaging. Woo! It's almost collectible and desirable just as an ugly object. Like, like it was just... And believe me, I'm not hurting anyone's feelings. Like, everyone at the office felt that way. Like, we're like, what were we doing? Like, why did we ship this again? I look forward to it myself, too, because... Whether at that scale or at the legacy scale, I'd love to see one. Rita's such a great iconic character, great iconic costume. The expression you can get at that scale could be so good, not like the one that we're talking about.
Okay, thank you so much. Thank you guys for your wonderful questions.
Thank you.
We're not done yet. We still got things to give.
5 minutes. We're going to do this really quickly. So, you guys, I have a number random generator over here. Okay, it's supposed to be 1 through 27. Okay, 27 have signed up. And if you can bring up the prizes, okay?
Bring them all up.
Seamus will give them out, and Jer will read the name as I call his name. Yes. All right, so, Seamus, what are we giving out first?
First up, we are going to give out Kimberly Pink Ranger figure.
I remember that one.
All right. So
Toys R Us exclusive for a while there.
The lucky winner of this is number 19. Who is number 19, Jeremiah?
19 is Dominic Young.
Dominic Young. Yeah. Congratulations. Come on up. All right. Rest it over there. Okay. And then we're going to move on to our next giveaway. Seamus, what are we giving away next?
We are giving away... You know, let's go big here. Seiza Blaster, that's what it's called,
ooh,
right?
Ooh, yes.
All right. You know, it's been loved. It's been loved, but inside it's impeccable. It's impeccable.
Yes. What toy grade is that? What's the collector grade on that one?
Fair.
Awesome, okay? 4.0. Okay, number two.
CJ Atkins.
CJ Atkins. All right, congrats. Hey, yes. All right, next.
Don't get caught in customs with that. Going back to Canada.
Okay, next up, what is the
three soft vinyl figures, one from Kamen Rider Kabuto Zabee cast on form, Black Q Ranger, and one of the crows from Tokuger.
All right, number 16.
16 is Julie Perez.
Julie Perez, come on up. Hey, look at you. I love your shirt. Your shirt is amazing. All right, what's up next? Oh, wait, we have these wonderful...
Are we going to give them all out separately or all together, or what are we doing with these?
Okay, you know what? Are there any young ones? Who has children? Oh, young ones, yes. You automatically win. Come on up.
Yay. Come on up. Youth.
Give them each, one of each.
One of each?
Yeah.
All right. There you go, my man.
There you go.
Good stuff for you.
Any other young ones? Okay, who has children?
Raise your hand if you got kids.
All right, come on up. You automatically win. Yes, Miss. Come on up if you have kids.
We got four things.
And we got
grab
this.
One. Oh, wait, got that too.
If you have children, come on up. Yes, anything
usually.
Else that can be for kids? Yes, anything else for kids? Because we got to run through these.
Anything else?
That's, whatever
I know, right?
The
oh, where is that? Oh,
I don't know.
That's fine. It's fine. It's fine. It's fine. It's fine. It's fine. All right. How many more prizes do we have in there?
We got one, two. We got some Q-tamas.
Yeah, give them to the kid. Kids. Exactly. Kids. Children.
And then we got.
Children. Yes. Give it. Children. He has three. He has three kids. Okay, he needs
men's
to.
Large.
Oh, it's a men's large.
Oh, yeah, that's all we got, man.
Wait a minute, hold on,
that's
wait a minute,
sleep
hold
shirt.
On, wait a minute.
Come on.
Kids! Kids! There you go. Boom. Okay, so the next up, what do we have? What do we have here?
Blue Ranger Comics. Right here.
I like Blue Rangers.
Okay, so number five.
Madeline Fernandez.
Madeline Fernandez, come on down. You are the winner.
Number five is alive.
You get to press the next number. Yeah, you get to call out the next number. You just press that button.
Oh, nice.
Yes. All right. So what do we have next up here?
Large MNPR Ranger Nation shirts. Yes, okay. Large.
You know what? I'm going to toss this out. Woo! Next.
All right, cat
next
guy got
Yellow
it.
Ranger.
Yellow Ranger. Yay! Yes, press that button. What number you got?
Number eight. Number eight. We got number eight.
Number eight.
Number eight. Eight, eight, eight.
Alistair, I can't, McDonald.
Yeah.
Hey, all right.
Yeah. Right on.
All right, how many?
Two more.
Okay, two more. Let's go. Next
so
one.
We got Chain Jirion 90s Tokusatsu. This guy knows what it is.
All right.
Four figures. It's like 1997, I believe.
Number three.
Number three is Melissa Keeley.
All right, congrats. Yes. See, aren't you glad? Aren't you glad you came?
And now.
Okay, and now the grand prize.
Oh, the winner.
Bum, 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 Psycho Silver.
Ooh. Psycho Silver. All right, give me a drum roll, please.
I don't even have one of those.
Number 21.
Woo!
Is Carolyn Reese.
Congratulations, Carolyn Reese! Yes! You get a very loved Psycho Silver, very loved Psycho Silver. Well, thank you again to everyone.
Who wants the box?
Yeah, who wants the box? Thank you, everyone. Thank you for coming.
It's the Farnsworth Paradox.
No, we're not tossing the box, no. But yes, please enjoy the con, enjoy the rest of the weekend, and thank you all. Thank you to Greg. Woo. Yay!